Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm. Today, my guest is Carol Edgarian. Vera is her third novel. We spoke to her last when her first novel, Rise the Euphrates, came out. There was a second called Three Stages of Amazement. And tell me, Carol, this book is set in 1906, in and around San Francisco, at the time of the 1906 earthquake, which was followed by fires that burned down 500 city blocks. How do you do research about parts of a city that no longer exist?
Well, it's interesting. There was so much by way of photographs and firsthand accounts, and certainly reporting. I read the original newspapers, but it was the photographs and the firsthand accounts that really gave me the greatest amount of fodder. And I'm reading not just for facts, of course. I'm also reading for the sensory detail. How did it smell? How did it sound? How moment to moment to moment did it look? Did it feel? And, you know, when I'm researching, I get so deep down, I go so far down rabbit holes, and I don't know what's going to stick. I might come across a little fragment of something that ultimately becomes the seed that of a whole scene or a whole through line in the book.
Vera is the daughter of a prostitute. She runs the most exotic, the most exquisite house of prostitution in San Francisco at the time. It's called The Rose, and the madam's name is Rose as well. And she realizes that she's not going to be able to raise a daughter. She leaves her daughter, Vera, to be raised by a Swedish widow whose name is Maury, which means mother. And her name is Maury Johnson. And so the character we get to meet on her 15th birthday is Vera Johnson. Now, let's bear in mind, San Francisco was first settled by the gold miners, and then when they move out, it's populated by businessmen, frequently crooked businessmen, who are coming to the town. And the houses of prostitution are a major factor in city life. And so we're meeting a 15-year-old, very brave, very perceptive daughter of a prostitute named Vera. We're told several times, I think three times in the course of the narrative, that Vera's name means truth. Tell me, what does truth have to do with your novel?
Rose is not just a madam, but she is a very successful businesswoman who has her finger in a lot of different pies. But when she names Vera Truth, in part it's because it's a name, Vera, that works in a lot of languages. But she also very early on, as she hands over her two-year-old daughter to this Swedish widow, she says, may she grow into her name. And really, you know, the arc of the book is this moment to moment of a very capable, intelligent 15-year-old girl trying to find out what is true in a corrupt world and in a fallen world, a world that suffers an epic disaster, which is, of course, the 1906 earthquake and fire. So moment to moment, what is true and ultimately who is true? Because one of the questions I was really looking at while writing this book in what I felt was a moment in which our own society was on the brink of collapse leading up to the 2016 election. Ultimately, when a society gets crushed or a society falls, who and what rises? That's interesting to me.
Many, many, many of the readers talk about Vera the way they talk about Jo March in Little Women, a strong, capable, independent woman whose voice is the voice of the book. And to hear an entire novel narrated by a 15-year-old girl who's coming to understand what prostitution is, what corruption is, who her real mother is. She only gets to see her birth mother, Rose, the madam, 3 or 4 times a year, if that. And she is learning about how to live in the system of corruption. Now, her stepmother, Maury, has a daughter. Her name is Pi, and we're told that that's short for Piper. They're two sisters, very different sisters. One of them is blonde and graceful. The other, our narrator Vera, has dark hair, olive skin. She's quite original, and grace is not one of her facilities. Maury's friends call Pi a graceful girl. But how would you describe Vera, Carol?
I would describe her as contrary. I would describe her as smart, as unmoored, even before the quake, as someone who is who finds both the humor and is unafraid to look at the shadow of things. I think as much as this is a story about a quake, it's also an adventure tale about someone who is outside of quote society. She is comfortable, yet she's unmoored. She's surrounded by this foster family, but she's unloved. She is looking for what is true in a corrupt world. And she's not a pleaser. And in that way, she was great fun to write. And I would say, in talking about the voice of the novel, there is the older, much older, wiser Vera, who is telling the tale. And then there is the younger 15-year-old Vera, who moment to moment is trying to figure out what is right and is led by her wits and smarts, both before the quake and then, of course, after the quake. She has to figure out not just how to survive, but she is in charge suddenly of this growing adopted community.
This community includes some of the girls from the Rose, the whorehouse, who come to live in Rose's golden house, which is in the city and on the other side of town from the house of prostitution. More and more girls show up. Also, the cook, Tan, and his father and his daughter, in other words, 3 generations of a Chinese family living in the house as well. And Vera is learning how to handle everything. The corrupt mayor, the man, the duke, who may have been her father, her mother, who has disappeared in the course of the earthquake and whose body is found in the rubble, brought home to recuperate, and gradually comes back to life, full life, during the course of the book. Although in the course of it, she will have to lose one of her eyes, and dear Vera is going to help with the operation with the psychoanalyst who lives across the street, who will help in this operation because the doctor never shows up. Now, seeing through only one eye is the opposite of what Vera does. She is decidedly two-eyed, and she seems to be able to observe everything. The habits of her dog, Rogue, the habits of her horse. Now tell me, it seemed like animals played an extraordinary role in this novel, Carol.
Well, animals are in many ways pure in their desires. And in a world that is corrupted, in a world of complexity, where human desire drives people and dooms them and invites them to commit foolish acts, the animals are a touchstone of what is true. And they're also, you know, in this moment of catastrophe, they feel it on a different level. I mean, one of the things I loved in my research coming across was how the horses, the evening before the great quake, the horses were unmanageable. They could feel it. And, I just had to think about it coming up from the rocks into their hooves, and that all night the dogs kept barking until the quake. And I'm always looking for those aspects of story that keep us on the earth and give us something oppositional to the mayhem the characters are pursuing. And all that, and I always will have a dog in all of my work.
Well, there's also a parakeet whose name is Ricky. He's green. He manages to escape from his cage. This is Pi's fault, but everyone forgives her. And the parakeet is found in the tree and flies back and forth from cage to tree, leading an observant life as well. Vera is a novel of San Francisco. It's by my guest, Carol Edgarian. We're told within the first two pages that Vera survives. Then we meet her at the beginning of the book on her 15th birthday, and we're going to follow her into old age. She's going to have had, by the end of the book, several marriages, several children. Her sister is going to marry a boy eventually who was at first dear to Vera. Did you know all of the places this book would go, or did it happen as you wrote it?
Both things. I always I conjure a beginning, and in all three books, part of what I wrote in the beginning ends up being the ending. I trick myself. I have no idea that's going to happen, but organically it happens. But I always have an idea of the very end, how I'm going to get there once I get all the characters in motion, is really a process of discovery. Who serves? Who comes forward? Who comes forward with a kind of complexity that I couldn't predict in the beginning? I mean, Tan, the character you spoke about, who is Rose's majordomo, chef, butler, who also has to serve begrudgingly as housekeeper in Vera's foster mother's house. Tan is a character. He has elegance. He has what Vera most desires, and that is a sense of family and love for his daughter. He's also, and every character in the novel is a thief. We learn that right off the bat, including Vera. This is a novel of thieves. And yet Tan and Vera start off in the book as rivals. They find each other to be inconvenient and more so. Yet as the novel progresses moment to moment to moment, they come to count on each other.
They even become partners, yes. They become partners. Tan still does the cooking, but by the time we significantly meet him, he's cooking out of doors. He's barbecuing for the homeless who are handling this 500-block fire in San Francisco that has left so many people homeless. Was it really that big, Carol?
It was. 250,000 homeless. You know, what happened is there was the quake. And of course, quakes happen in series. So there was the first shaker, followed quickly by a very significant aftershock, and then hundreds of aftershocks. But in the process of those first two big jolts, the gas lines broke, and worse, the water mains broke. So there was no water to fight the fires that erupted from the broken gas lines. And there were more than 50 fires in all. The fires burned for 3 days. And at the end, there was 28,000 buildings, 500 city blocks were just reduced to ash.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Carol Edgarian about her new novel, Vera, which is published by Scribner's. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Carol Edgarian about her new novel, Vera, a sweeping and gripping coming-of-age story that takes place amid the devastating earthquakes and fires of San Francisco in 1906. Many, many, many secrets are revealed, and these secrets are the product of the earthquake. They are revealing what's been hidden in basement after basement. Insofar as any of these homeless people have money, it's money they've retrieved from a hiding place in a now decimated home. And what we're seeing is the rebuilding of an entire culture from its gold rush days of miners and prostitutes to its initial corrupt political, a famous corrupt mayor, Eugene Schmitz, apparently one of the marvels, legends in the stories of corruption in San Francisco. And this girl, Vera, is going to understand the difference between truth, her name, Vera, and corruption, which involves bribery, prostitution, false love. In other words, it's a true coming-of-age novel, which is about the coming of truth to the sensibility of a young person. What was it like to grow up as a young girl in 1906?
Well, there's the conventional upbringing that we don't really see, except we don't see anywhere. The mayor's daughter is the same age, but of course her father's a crook. And then there's Vera, who's the daughter of a madam who has no idea who her father is. So we don't ever really see the conventional young woman. What we see are all these players, and even San Francisco society, which, to your point, started out as a place founded by miners. So had that entrepreneurial rules don't apply to us hubristic zeal from day one, and very much so still in 1906. So what is just happening in 1906 is the city has sort of gotten to the point where it's going to have sort of that upstanding quality, or it's yearning for that. There's certainly enough money to invite people to build big houses. There are, you know, stores and all of that. And on the night before the quake, Enrico Caruso is going to come and sing. And that is sort of a moment of arrival for a city. And so it's society, in quotes, is just really starting to assert itself when the quake happens and when society gets crushed literally in a minute. What's interesting and what the book really, in my mind, is looking at is who and what rises out of the ashes. And there's that moment before society reasserts itself where all these players who've been marginalized have potentially an opportunity to find agency.
I had read Susan Sontag's novel In America, and the thing to bear in mind is that the West Coast is a place Sarah Bernhardt is visiting. They are receiving not only Caruso, but their first performances of Shakespeare. This is a culture that is waking up and discovering itself. It doesn't quite know how to understand what it's missing, but it knows that something is missing, and Vera does too. She knows that certain kinds of food, certain kinds of parentage. Now, am I remembering correctly, Carol? Did I read that your own mother was an orphan till age 15?
My mother was first generation. Her parents came over. They were alcoholics and came over during Prohibition, thinking that would solve the alcoholic problem, which of course it didn't. And my mother was taken away from her parents at the age of 5 and put in an orphanage where she remained till the day she turned 18. So she wasn't an orphan. She had parents living in the same town, and she had aunts living in the same town, but there she was in an orphanage.
This novel, Vera, is really a novel about mothers and daughters, yes?
Yes, and I would say in the broader scheme, what constitutes family? Because ultimately, it's not Vera's mother who provides family. It's these characters like Tan and Capability and Valentine who in the crisis prove.
Those are prostitutes.
That's right.
One of them is dressed as a woman, but is a has a baritone voice. And Capability Jones is another fabulous hooker. Vera tells us at the end of her first chapter, "I am not a hooker, but I am a thief." By your lights, what is it she's stolen?
Well, there's what she literally steals, and I don't think we should give that away.
No.
But there's also that sense that when you don't have a place, when you're looking for home, and there is no home, and I think, you know, really, this is an American problem, at least as I see it. And I think we're even living it today. You know, what is home? What is belonging? Who are our people? So many of us have the story of displacement. You know, you talked about my mother, but on my father's side, there was the Armenian genocide that all of my father's relatives have brought with them, and which my generation is still trying to reconcile the unreconcilable. And so Vera is literally a thief, but she's also stolen taken parts that weren't given to her. She has cobbled together a life. And there is that sense, given her background, that even the love she ultimately finds is stolen or illicit or not at usual love.
Yes, what I'd say to my listeners is that if you want to read the story of a 15-year-old girl growing up, finding love, losing love, building a family, losing that family over and over and over again. A family is seen to be something radically unstable, just as the city, San Francisco, which is described throughout as a woman. San Francisco is a woman losing her property. I recommend Vera to those who want to read a book about a young woman gaining access to her destiny. It's published by Scribner's, and I've been talking with its author, Carol Edgarian. The book is called Vera. Thank you, Carol, for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It's such a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are each taping remotely, so you may hear unusual sounds. And I want to tell you that you can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show. Also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can be listened to on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. With special thanks to my beloved Bookworm show collaborators, Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan, engineer Mario Saavedra, and technical director PJ Shahamat, I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.